Fourth and final hour, Darren Donick and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints. Smoother than smooth here on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McKay with you now. Josh Kendall covers the Gamecocks for The Athletic. South Carolina going back and forth, back and forth. And Oxford against Ole Miss on Saturday night until it finally got away from them. And the Rebels hang 59 on Will Muschamp and company. And then South Carolina decided to part ways and move on from Will Muschamp. And Josh is here to discuss all that. Josh, thanks for doing this. And did you see this coming no matter what happened on Saturday, or was this a bit of a surprise?
Not no matter what happened. I think it would have been difficult for them to fire him yesterday if they had won on Saturday. I don't think it would have changed the long term, as in the end of the season outcome. But I don't think they would have fired him coming off of a win. So if they could close that game out, I think Will Muschamp would still be coaching today. But I'm not sure, and I just don't think it would have changed the outcome for heading into 2021.
Everybody thought coaches were going to get a COVID pass, so to speak, in 2020. Well, that is not the case in Columbia. Ultimately, why do you think we reached this point where we're talking about this today?
And I've got to admit, I was right there at the front of that line, and I've been saying it loudly and wrongly all year long, most of the year, that I just thought that given the reality of the world, which is the reality of the world, there is a literal pandemic going on. South Carolina is literally going to be $40 million plus short of its budget goals, and a lot of other people are too. I thought this was not going to be the time you change coaches. What I forgot is that this is still the SEC, and the SEC proves time and time again that number one on the list of goals is to win football games. And if you don't win football games, it does not matter what else is happening. There's going to be a change. So, graduating players does not change that. Being a good guy does not change that. Loving the university and bleeding garnet or bleeding orange and blue or whatever does not change that. It's about winning football games. Will Muschamp didn't win enough.
Did he check all those other boxes that you said?
Oh, absolutely.
Other than the winning?
Yeah, this team has not had a whiff of any impropriety off the field. His players almost universally love him and defend him. Will tell you that he cares about them off the field and all the things he's done for him. Hayden Hurst, the Falcons tight end, who has been very public about his battles with mental illness, had some particularly heartfelt stuff to say yesterday about how Will really helped him when he went through a very tough time when he was here. Lots of stories like that immediately pop up about Will, same as they did at Florida. Yeah, this is, and Ray Tanner, who fired him yesterday evening in his office, was torn up about it because Ray knows that of all these other things. But Ray also knows, and we all know, and even though some of us like me forget, from time to time, it doesn't matter unless you win.
Why was the move necessary now as opposed to when this season ended?
Two things. The fan base was in danger of just kind of giving up on them, which can also be an expensive proposition in the long run in dollars and cents. And there began to be some real concerns about just holding this thing together for three more weeks in its current itineration. They not only lost three in a row, they lost in really demoralizing fashion. They gave 159 points in 3 weeks. They'd never done that before in program history, but a lot of programs haven't done it still. They just looked really bad. And so I think that there was a concern that if you don't beat Missouri on Saturday, which might be your last chance for a win, and then you got embarrassed against Georgia, I mean, does it eventually just come apart under its own weight? So they felt like a decision was something had to be done, and so they were going to go ahead and do it. This puts them as the first Power Five school in line for a coach. That's probably helpful. So I think those are the biggest factors.
With that in mind, Josh, do you think as they make this move, they have their target? Because I think that's an important point, that when the earlier you make the move, the advantage you have is you don't have to keep a secret that you're out looking around. So where do you think the arrows are pointing? Do you think they have a clear first choice?
I don't think that they do, but I'm going to say this. I think that this will be one of the toughest SEC coaching searches to forecast in recent memory, because I think that the university president, Bob Caslin, who's not an SEC guy, came to the school formerly the superintendent of West Point, was very involved in hiring Jeff Monken there. He's going to be the guy, I think, that is going to, really power this search and probably make the final decision. So he's not connected to the traditional powers that be in the league. So if he does have somebody specific in mind, he certainly has not tipped his hand to that. I don't think he does, but, you know, it may be that I think we've probably in all of our giant lists somewhere named South Carolina's next head coach already. But if you told me, you guys don't have a clue, this is coming completely off the board, that wouldn't shock me.
Talking to Josh Kendall, he covers South Carolina for The Athletic. So, Josh, do you think they're open to the idea of Hugh Freeze, or do you think the baggage is just too much?
Ray Tanner, I was asked specifically about Hugh Freeze today, and it said nobody would be ruled out. But I think the baggage is a lot. I think that South Carolina, I don't think that would be a hire that Ray Tanner would want to make. I don't think that would be a hire that the former superintendent of West Point, a guy who just published a book called Winning with Character or something of the like, would lean toward. I think that Hugh Freeze is a long shot for the South Carolina job. But again, let's circle back around to the fact that I was the guy saying very publicly that you can't fire a football coach in the middle of a pandemic, forgetting that, you know, at the end of the day, the SEC cares about winning football games first, and there's nothing else in second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth place.
I heard, I was reading some of the comments from Ray Tanner. One of them that I think got some attention was he's looking for somebody maybe with an offensive mind. So Steve Sarkisian, to me, is also an intriguing guy within the league. Your thoughts on him?
Absolutely. I think that Sarkisian is going to get a lot of interest from a lot of people. I do think that we're at the end of the cycle of defensive head coaches. I wonder if, ironically, if being a Nick Saban guy is going to be a strike against Sarkisian here, at least, because they're just coming off of a Nick Saban guy. I think universally a little bit, some of the bloom is coming off of that rose of the Nick Saban guys. So, but Steve Sarkisian, you know, really stood on his own before Nick Saban, clearly is an excellent offensive football coach. He gets a shot somewhere. I think he would be a really good hire for South Carolina if they can get him.
Josh Kendall is with us from The Athletic talking South Carolina. So does, in your mind, Mike Bobo taking over as the interim, does he have any type of shot at potentially landing this job, or is this simply just to finish the year?
This is simply just to finish the year. I don't think he has any chance. I don't think he has any real illusion that he has any chance. This is a program that needs a fresh start. Ray Tanner made that, you know, much clearer when he talked about how important passion, enthusiasm, fun were for his next head coach. That's nothing against Mike. It's just that, you know, this is one of those cases in a lot of coaching changes, you see somebody is held over because they have a certain tie to this guy, they have a certain tie to this recruiting region. That might happen here, but you also could see a situation here where it's completely new personnel, you know, on the coaching staff next year.
I think, you know, living here in Nashville and covering Vanderbilt, you always have to ask, okay, what's realistic? What is a realistic goal for Vanderbilt football? So I'll ask you the same thing about South Carolina. Whoever the next coach is, what do you think is realistic when it comes to being successful at that job?
Well, that's a question South Carolina's got to ask itself, and I think it's important how they answer it. I think the fact that they've just built a $50 million football facility is an indication that they believe, or at least they've sold to their boosters, that they believe that they can be an elite football program in the country. But it's harder than just building giant buildings. That's part of it, but that's not the most important part of it. And, you know, I just don't know that South Carolina has all the ingredients it needs to be a perennial contender. It does not have a locked-in geographic recruiting base like Georgia and Florida do, who they have to contend with every year. It doesn't have the name recognition and the brand power that Georgia and Florida and now Clemson do that it has to compete with. I think that South Carolina would be better in the long run to set its sights on being an 8-4, 9-3 football team every year, where every few cycles you have a legitimate shot to play in Atlanta. I think that it might – I don't think it has served South Carolina well – to try to be something that it can't realistically be over the long term.
To me, I believe that, you know, Will Muschamp, he's used up all his chances as head coach in the SEC, but do you see him sticking around as a coordinator somewhere?
I do. I think he really likes to coach. I think a lot of these guys really like to coach and get almost addicted to the lifestyle because they just really enjoy the job and every part of the job. I think Will's one of those guys. He likes to coach. He could take a year off. He could take the rest of his life off and live on an island. I mean, he's made enough money. But he could have taken a year off after Florida, too, and he went right back to work. He likes it. He'll coach again pretty quickly, I would imagine.
I know we're asking you, you know, a lot of things can happen, but we're just asking you today to wrap this up with, what's your best guess? What do you think is realistic today? Like I said, subject to change, who would you put atop the list?
Well, it's a crowded field, and there's no runaway betting favorite. If you had to just, you know, I think the slight favorite is Billy Napier, because he checks a lot of boxes, because he's very gettable, because he has ties to the region, because he would be a good hire. You know, everything else is either a long shot because South Carolina might not be able to get that person, or a long shot because South Carolina might not want that person or be happy ending up with that person. When you sort through all of that, you know, there are no strikes against Billy Napier. So I think for the moment, that puts him at the top of the list. But we're still early in primary season here. I don't think we've gotten to the general election yet on this thing.
Josh, good stuff. Really appreciate the visit. It will be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Josh Kendall, covers the Gamecocks for The Athletic. Billy Napier, that's an interesting name,
yeah.
And I think it's a good one to throw out there. We'll talk about this on the other side. Like, can you have sustained success there? It's not about one-off. And is South Carolina also one of those fan bases in this conference that we've talked about where at times they get unrealistic what they are year in and year out, right? We'll get into all that on the other side. With Week 10 of football almost in the books, you've got the Bears and the Vikings tonight. It is time for you to start reviewing the tape and getting ready for Week 11 like I'm doing, like starting with Arizona and Seattle on Thursday night in the NFL. I think that is a really intriguing matchup, and hopefully a lot more college games this upcoming Saturday. There's no better place to get in on all the action than DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. To do is add the excitement of Week 11. DraftKings Sportsbook is going to bring back your can't-miss offer. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, you've heard me talking about it, you need to head to the App Store right now, and you don't want to miss out on this, okay? You want to download that DraftKings Sportsbook app, and it's going to give all new users the chance to earn a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000 when you sign up and use the promo code 1025GAME. So if you're trying to try it out for the first time this week, download the Sportsbook app at DraftKings. Use that code 1025THEGAME, and they're going to give you the opportunity to earn up to $1,000. Yeah, how about that as a sign-up bonus? Also, if maybe football isn't for you, or you would like to dabble in some MMA, you know, for all you MMA fans out there, I bet you can sign up now. The chance to win triple your winnings for any bet placed on UFC 255. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code 1025THEGAME, and when you sign up, you'll get up to $1,000. That code, 1025THEGAME, get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Hey. Thank you, Matthias. We'll have some Predators news. Then about a jersey before we get out of here today. A third one. We'll talk about that in just a bit. So good stuff there from Josh Kendall. Covers South Carolina. They have moved on from Will Muschamp. Billy Napier is an interesting name. He was a quarterback at Furman, so he knows kind of the lay of the land of that area. He spent time, I guess, right out of the gates as a GA at South Carolina State and Clemson. He's been in the SEC as an offensive analyst at Alabama and then the wide receivers coach. He's currently the Louisiana head coach. And he's only, in, he's, I think, 40, 41 years old.
Yeah,
They're fun to watch. He's an offensive mind. He's going to check a lot of boxes. I definitely think he's going to be in the mix at South Carolina. But it is still very, very early. But I did see where Ray Tanner is going to want to make the hire in the next month. They're going to want to have their coach in place by mid-December because obviously there's a lot of recruiting. Now with the two phases of recruiting, it's not about just one signing day. You got the early signing period, and so look for South Carolina to find their guy here probably in the next, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, right?
Yeah.
And find out who they're going to hire.
He'll get to coach the December 19th game?
I don't know. I don't think he'll get hired and then coach right away. My guess is probably not. But they'll probably just stick with Bobo until season concludes. Who knows? South Carolina could end up here in a bowl game. You know? You never know. The other one to mention is what I've been bringing up for weeks, and it just gets hairier and hairier and hairier, and that's Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. And I know you guys watched. It was part of our pick six. They were on primetime television Saturday night against Wisconsin, and they just got drubbed again. And what's interesting about Michigan and their start, they're just really not even that competitive in their games right now. They weren't competitive in the Indiana game. They weren't competitive against Wisconsin. And you could say, well, yeah, but that's two good teams. Okay. Well, you don't hire somebody at Michigan and pay them $8 million a year to say, yeah, but Indiana and Wisconsin are really good. They don't care about that. That's not why they hire you at Michigan. You're supposed to be really good. You're supposed to be winning those games. And this doesn't look like it's going to get turned around anytime soon because, quite honestly, they just don't look like they're very good. Agree or disagree?
Well, it was eye-opening on Saturday. That was one of our pick six games, so I was watching intently. I was going for the extra point, and I actually doubled down on the top shelf just thinking this has got to be the best that Michigan has to offer, right? Their backs are to the wall. They get a chance to play on national television against Wisconsin. What a great way to jumpstart your season. And it was the total opposite. And I will say this, Wisconsin, their quarterback, they've got a quarterback that is legit. That guy is better than most of the Wisconsin. What do we know about Wisconsin? Usually they have a really good running back,
yep,
a good solid running game, and, you know, it's a steady team. But this guy is different. This guy
can play
is
defense,
very good,
by the way.
Oh, yep. Yeah. But so he's an upgrade. But that being said, Michigan just came out. They were down 28-0 before they realized the game had even started. They throw interceptions on the first two possessions. Kirk Herbstreit was trying to be nice, but he could not help but say, what is going on here? You know, there's no life. There's no energy. That is alarming. It's one thing to get beat, but they brought nothing to the table. So that has to be alarming to Jim Harbaugh and everybody surrounding that program.
Yeah, they just don't look interested anymore. It just, you could just read the body language of Harbaugh and the players, and you can just tell it's just all the energy has been sucked out of that program. So I was listening this morning, and, you know, Joe Rexroad obviously has a lot of ties to Michigan and knows that area. He doesn't think they're going to fire him. I tend to think they probably won't. I just think he leaves. I think he ends up going back to the NFL. I've kind of felt that way for a while, but something's going to have to change because it just hasn't worked. For whatever reason, it hasn't worked. And I've always thought he was overrated, but I still thought he was a good coach. And I would think that, you know, or I would have thought it would have been better than it has been since he's been there. But can't beat Ohio State, just a rudderless ship right now. Something's got to change, and it probably will, and it'll probably result in him getting an NFL job.
Here's somewhere. The question. I don't know about that. Is the bloom off the rose for Jim Harbaugh? Is this kind of turning? Is this starting to feel like Chip Kelly? Like the better days are way behind him.
Yeah, but that's a little different.
With every passing year, they're further removed from the big success, the hot program. So they've lost momentum. There's no question that that's the case. So I don't know. You know, some of that can be perception, but I think in this case, it's pretty much a fact. They've been labeled now as they're a notch below the Ohio States, and now they're dipping another notch. Right.
Yeah, I think the difference there is Chip Kelly was awful in the NFL, and
he really wasn't awful. They actually were winning 10 games a year, and they couldn't get in the playoffs winning 10 games. Did he not?
No. Was that 1 year?
Did he win 10 games?
He might have had one good year. I'll look that up. Keep talking.
He never could get in the playoffs.
He obviously never went to a Super Bowl. Harbaugh's shine was pretty high, right? When he went from Stanford to the NFL and then to Michigan, was as hot as they come.
Celebrated.
Right?
Great. Great hype. First two years, he went 10-6.
Yeah, you're
actually
right.
Actually went to the playoffs
year. 6-9 and then 2-14.
Yeah, 2-14 in San Fran. I was talking about in Philly.
Yeah.
He went 10-6 his first 2 years.
Yeah, so not awful. It's fair. I mean, he had a reasonable amount of success. But it's just interesting your name can be the brightest of the bright, the hottest name, and just a few years later, it's a totally different perception.
He's been a hot pile of garbage at UCLA. I mean, just nothing. He's getting nothing done there.
Yeah, they have not been good.
No.
That's what I'm saying. They won yesterday, I guess.
He's about to slide into the abyss. I mean, I just think that he's getting dangerously close to it. Whenever this comes to an end at UCLA, I mean, what's going to be the demand, or is there any demand at all for Chip Kelly's services anymore?
3-9, 4-8, starting this year, 1-1. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. So let's say if they move on or he leaves or whatever, that job is open. Who's the name? Who's the hot name?
I don't know.
Do they hire an Ohio State guy in Fickell? I think Fickell's probably going to be one of the top names out there, Cincinnati.
Would Ohio State guy go to Michigan? Would Michigan hire an Ohio State guy?
Both are good questions, but
Michigan has hired an Ohio State guy.
Have they?
Wasn't Bo Schembechler an Ohio State guy? Wasn't he a Woody Hayes assistant before he went to Michigan?
That
may be right. I know that there. Remember when Miami of Ohio was like the cradle of all the coach. Remember everybody was coming out of Miami of Ohio.
Well, and that's where Bo was.
So he did. He was. Bo Schembechler was twice at Ohio State before he became the head coach at Miami of Ohio, and then went to Michigan in 1969. So there is a precedent. That's a pretty big precedent.
Because he was at Miami of Ohio for a good while, I think. He was there like five or six years before he got, you know. So it maybe had been time removed as an assistant at Ohio State.
Right. And Bo Schembechler was, he didn't play at Ohio State. So Fickell was a good, solid player at Ohio State.
Right.
And stayed on the staff the whole time. So that would be a big change for him.
I think Bo played at Miami of Ohio, right? Well, he was a player there, was he not?
He did.
Yeah.
The cradle of coaches.
It seemed like kind of like, remember the time when Tulsa, for whatever reason, for basketball, it was like all the big guys were going through Tulsa before they got their big job. Same was with Miami of Ohio. I don't think it's like that anymore, but there was a time, man. It was just like if you went through Miami of Ohio as a football coach, you were about to become the next big thing. I don't know. I don't know where they turn.
I mean, there's some really good questions. Names. pretty good names that are going to be out there, of, you know, just coordinators. You know, Brent Venables, I would think it's time, the defensive coordinator at Clemson, that he gets a job. Tony Elliott, the OC at Clemson, he's
yeah, those
he's
are two
name.
big names. I wonder if one of those guys, if not both, end up in the mix at South Carolina. But that
well, the Clemson
comes back
OC.
To the same.
Clemson thing, though. I don't
Clemson
know.
Versus South Carolina. That's
I know.
The same
That's
thing
a
as Ohio
huge,
State, Michigan.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But really? Alabama and Auburn have had people that have been at both places, so you never can rule it out.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to figure what
Tennessee's
jobs.
Had plenty of guys with Alabama ties that have come over there.
What? Yeah, and but what jobs are going to be open? I mean, how many are truly going to be open? The COVID thing didn't stop South Carolina from making a move. You know, there could be another job or two open in the SEC, but I don't think there's going to be as many to choose from as maybe we've seen in years past.
I'm kind of with Joe Rexroth. I don't know that they will fire Harbaugh. I just do wonder if Harbaugh takes a Tubby Smith approach. I'm going to get out before the house burns down. Right, I'm gonna jump out one step ahead and take a leap to another situation. Maybe it is the NFL. I don't know. And that begs another question: is would he be a hot name if he said I'm back in the ring? I want one of these NFL jobs. Would people jump at the chance to grab him? I don't know.
That's what I'm at. That's because what I'm saying. I'm not sure that right now he's real attractive.
I don't know. I just – you guys aren't – I guess you guys aren't as gung-ho on it as I am. I still think they'll look at – even though it's been several years since he's been out, he had a lot of success. And we've seen – you know, we've seen some coaches go to college for – I mean, Pete Carroll's the best example of somebody that's, you know, left the NFL, was okay in the NFL, went to college, came back, and obviously has done a lot at Seattle. But I don't know. I think if he said, hey, I'm available, there would be a team that would call. But maybe that's just me.
Don't you need more of kind of a I don't know. I guess I don't really know. I could say the examples of both. I was going to say maybe his style, does it fit the NFL a little bit more? Because he's a weird, quirky dude. I don't know how close he gets to his players, and maybe that's served better on a professional level, but I don't know. There's also guys like that in the college that aren't exactly known as, you know, they don't all dance.
Right.
Some do, but not, you know, they're not all icky.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Because a lot of them, it's just, you know, they tell you what you want to hear, and it's just about recruiting and, you know, the whole, everything you've ever heard described for a lot of these guys, it is true. Not all of them, but I mean, there is certain level of ickiness to it because they will just tell you whatever you want to hear to get in your home, to get, you know, get you to sign up for their program, or the same with the media. But you know, really, when you get to know them, it's like you just feel kind of like you need a shower. They're not all like that. I don't know. I don't know if Jim Harbaugh doesn't even look that interested right now. His players don't look interested. He doesn't look interested. Just look at him on the sidelines.
Going through the motions.
That was so alarming, that whole outing on Saturday. Just so lackluster in your own stadium. That was really, really troublesome. So where do they go from here?
I mean,
Let's stay on this, but let's flip over to the basketball side because there's been some pretty big news that has hit during the course of our show today. So let's talk about where the NCAA tournament is headed. Because it looks like a guest that we had on a while back was on to something about college basketball and really trying to limit as much as they can / bubble situation. Remember when we had Gary Parrish on?
Yep.
And it looks like they're prepared to do that with their tournament.
Yep. They put it out that The Division I Men's Basketball Committee has decided the NCAA tournament should be held in a single geographic area. As a result, NCAA staff are in preliminary talks with the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis to potentially host the 68-team tournament around the metro area during the coordinated dates in March and April.
Which is interesting because it's not truly a bubble. It's, I guess, a semi-bubble. But they have to have some ideas on... The reason you would do it would be to mitigate all of the risk, or as much of the risk as you possibly can have. But I wonder some of the details of where all the teams would stay, where they would play. You know, how much of a bubble is it? If it's not 100% a bubble, what percentage of a bubble is it?
Right. Well, I mean, it sounds like they would use, you know, just use different facilities.
Right. I mean, you got plenty of places you can play in that.
Where the Pacers play, you got Butler. I mean, that'd be cool, having some NCAA tournament games at Butler.
Right, and I'm guessing you wouldn't have any fans, though, so you could play in any number of buildings.
Sure.
But how would the TV work? There's a lot of questions, and this is all over the weekend. You know, you had Rick Pitino saying we need to delay the season for a couple of months because we're never going to be able to play. Jim Boeheim picked up the virus. One of his players did. There's a number of teams that have had to stop practice because unlike football where, okay, we got, let's just throw out the number, 10 guys or 8 guys that can't practice. Well, we still have enough guys we can play. In basketball, if you lose 3 guys – and you got to quarantine another 5 guys, then you don't have enough guys to play. So the numbers are going to make it very difficult to be able to handle a case that pops up here or there on your in your traveling party. So that raises a lot of concerns. So how do we get to this? How do we get to March where you can play this tournament in the bubble?
Well, I know that. I remember Gary Parrish telling us the NCAA tournament will happen. I think that is the point of this story. You're right. There's a lot of work that has to get done to get to that point. But I guess what they're trying to come out and say, like, we're going to have it if it's just in Indianapolis or whatever we have to do, but we're going to have the men's basketball tournament this year. It will take place. I think that is the point to this. Yeah, how does it look? How many games do teams actually play before we get to that point? I mean, who knows? I don't know if they're going to get in what they think they're going to get in the regular season. I think that this is just them coming out and basically telling you, in case you were wondering, in case you were concerned on whether we will have a tournament or not, we are going to have one. We're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out how to make it work, but it's going to happen. That's what I take from it.
Well, I think they've been planning on having one the whole time. It's interesting that they haven't put out any flexibility on the time. And is that a possibility, being able to push it back? Like, Rick Pitino doesn't have the voice he used to have in college basketball.
You think?
But I wonder, it was an interesting thing.
He doesn't have juice right now?
I mean, he's always going to have a big name.
Where's he the coach again?
Iona.
Exactly.
Sure.
Well, that's my point, though. He has a job. He has a team that he's running, and they're in the NCAA. It's an interesting theory that he has. He's basically saying, we're not going to be able to play. We're going to have to push this thing back. And so is there any – what is the flexibility for the NCAA tournament with the TV money, the window, the partners – Could they move it back at all if we get to a point where you're just not going to be able to really have enough games played to have a good feel for these are the 68 teams that belong in this tournament?
But there's no way to know that. I mean, there's what do you do? I mean, until you start doing this, there's no way to know how many you're going to get in and who can get in more than the others?
But I think seeing what's happening in football right now, it's got some people raising red flags. And as we said, with basketball, just a couple of cases here and there can derail you for a week or 2 weeks where you're missing six games. If you miss
right,
two,
but in red
two,
flags, as of right now, they're still the conferences that started up when they did, ACC, SEC, and Big 12, they're still planning on getting their games in.
And so far, they're
playing
so
on
far.
It.
Well, that's
yeah,
but right
so
now
good.
They're I mean, planning. They're on course. The only ones that are
basketball.
Messed up, the ones that started late.
I'm talking about basketball.
Right, but the point
basketball is a different deal. We're starting with a very, very high number of cases compared to where we started in football. And less cases or less players on a team mean you see what I'm saying. It's
right,
it's,
but how do you so formula. How are you going to plan for that? I mean, what are you going to do until you start?
Push the season back is what some basketball coaches are saying. So Pitino threw this out there, right? He's not alone. He's saying this is just a tweet by Rick Pitino. Save the season. Move the start back. Play league schedule and have May Madness. Spiking in protocols make it impossible to play right now. Pitino is echoing what other coaches have conveyed privately. One hope, if I can say this, one high-profile coach recently told ESPN that the current situation for college basketball is, quote, scary. Another coach in a non-Power 5 league says he thinks it's impossible for his league to play. Not his team, his league to play. Multiple programs have already been sidelined by the 14-day quarantine for teams after a player, coach, or staffer test positive. Iona is on the sideline for 2 weeks. Now, you talk about a guy that will be climbing walls because he can't do anything for 2 weeks. Rick Pitino is like that, and most college basketball coaches are wired that way. So I'm just saying it's
but you
it's
can't
be...
speak for everybody. It's a case-by-case, conference-by-conference, area-by-area. I mean, the ACC is not going to hold up. It's like football. It's like, okay, if you can play, play. If you can't, you can't. I think that's how you're going to have to approach the basketball season. I mean, there's no more clarity of moving back hasn't changed anything. The Pac-12 and the Big Ten tried to do that, and they said, we're going to wait till spring, and then all of a sudden they came running back. I mean, what more clarity is there going to be of, hey, let's hold out? There is nobody knows. Just why don't you just do what you're planning on doing, and if you can play that week, you play. If you can't, you can't.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of – by the way, basketball's got how many Division I teams? 350? I mean, of course we know there's going to be all kinds of cancel games or postponements or games you can't make up. But just sitting there waiting, acting like, hey, if we just give it two more months to breathe, it'll look a little bit better. It doesn't – we've already learned. Just get in there, and if you can pull it off, you pull it off. If you can't, you can't.
But what's different is the caseload is so much higher now, plus we think we have a better idea of when the vaccine – is coming.
We
is coming
don't
around.
Have. We have a better idea when it's out. That's the way I look at it. Come on. Until there's something out there, we don't have a better idea. It's just talk. That's all it is. Until something comes out, we don't have a better idea. Most people who are in the boat, I would believe, like me. I'll believe it when I see it. Like, let's just see it when it's out there.
But
like,
I think
acting like 2 months from now, a month from now, spring. I believe me, I have a lot of friends in the medical field, and they hear a lot of stuff, and they tell me stuff all the time. And it changes day to day, week to week, month to month. I've heard all kinds of stuff. And they're just as indecisive today as they were 2 months ago, 2 days ago, 6 months ago.
So let me
ask
you.
I'm just saying,
this.
If you read the individual stories from a lot of Division I basketball programs, they're not sure they can play. And these are people that desperately want to play. They're not looking for, I mean, the Ivy League's already said we're out, not playing.
Okay, that's fine. You think the ACC is going to say they're out?
New Mexico State and New Mexico could be forced to relocate their teams this season due to a state regulations.
That's fine. You got to do what you got to do. But you know what? I bet the ACC is going to be ready to tip.
Yep.
You would think those blue blood schools, they'll be ready to tip.
Yeah, and how much?
You know what? If you can't get going in New Mexico,
okay, let's take the ACC.
Can't go.
Per the ACC's new guidelines, any athlete who leaves campus for more than 3 days must quarantine for 24 hours before returning to practice or competition. My point is, you have a lot of so let's say Duke goes and plays in a tournament, If you leave the campus for more than 3 days, you got to quarantine for 24 hours before returning to practice. There's all these hurdles and things that are going to catch up with all the programs.
But 2 days,
you're logistically
good. 2 days, you're fine. 3 days, you may have it. What's the difference?
Well, I'm letting you guys know that this is going to be.
Well, there's going to be hurdles no matter what. Well, great. Like, we didn't know that. That's something new. That basketball's got more challenges.
But it's different when you're trying to get in
because there's more teams and more games.
You're trying to get in 8 or 10 games in football. If you have a weak problem in basketball, that's 3 games.
The point is, Willie, sitting back and acting like another month here, give it another month there. They don't have any idea. My point is, just do it, and if you can do it, great. If you can't, you can't. No harm, no foul. It's just what it is. Some areas are going to be better than others. That's the way you got too many schools, too many conferences. You can't all – they're not going to all get on the same page. And waiting around and acting like it may be better, maybe it will, and maybe it won't. I say just do it, and if you can get games in – and some may play 20, some may play 16, some may play 14, then that's just what it is. We're going to have that in football too. We recognize it's not going to be normal. But I just think acting like, hey, if you can push it back a little bit more, everything will be fine then. No, we've learned.
I'm not talking about a little bit. A couple weeks is not – I'm talking about 2 months. That's basically what Rick Pitino was throwing out.
Two months would be different. No, it wouldn't. I would say it probably won't. There's no way to know that. Could, but it may not be. So what have you done? You just canned 2 months, and you didn't get anything accomplished because it's exactly the same way, and you just lost 2 months when teams could have been playing. That's the way I look at it. That's just me. I want to talk to you right now about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. I want to talk about them because I've been talking about them for years. I've been going there for years like a lot of you. In this area, they've been around in Middle Tennessee since 2007. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is front and center over there as the board-certified physician. His wife, Daphne, is the registered nurse. And their experienced staff have so many things that they can help you with under one roof. It's a big facility over there, and they do a lot of things. And they would love to improve your quality of life. Who doesn't want that? I know I do. That's why I go there. That's what they've been doing for me. And the older we get, more things start happening. They understand that. They recognize that. And they're willing to help. Maybe you haven't been feeling the same lately. And maybe you've been feeling off. Well, go over there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy. They can help you in that department. They can check your levels and can find out if maybe they've been dipping really far, which sometimes happens the older you get. And maybe that's affecting your energy. That's affecting your mood. That maybe affect the way you're feeling. And they can help you in that department. Face and body rejuvenation. Weight loss management is always important, but really important in 2020. We get it. You're out of your routine. Maybe your workouts have been thrown off and you just haven't gotten back into it. You've put on some unwanted pounds. Well, they've got people and programs that can get you going in the right direction. These are just some of many things they house under one roof. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with these folks, dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or if you need to learn everything about them and what they're all about, just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. It is not smooth right now for Drew Brees. The results have come back, and it is not good on Saints quarterback Drew Brees. He evidently sustained broken ribs in their blowout win over the Bucks that they didn't know about. Now they're reporting, Ed Warder is putting this out there from ESPN, that he's been diagnosed with, I guess, 5 broken ribs? What? I guess 3 originally were broken from the Bucks game and then 2 more after their win over the 49ers? And he's got a collapsed lung? Looks like he could be missing some missing some time with New Orleans, which means famous Jameis, Jameis Winston, or Taysom Hill, or both, could be the QB's under center for a while until Drew Brees is ready. And right now, I would say, yeah, I'd say that they're the they're the best in the NFC right now, right? You, when you put them as the best team in the NFC,
isn't it crazy that it's their defense that's really stepped up to where you're probably thinking, you know what, they could get by for a couple weeks without Drew Brees. There was a time where this would have derailed their whole season.
Yep.
And also, like you've said for years, Darren, the investment in the backup quarterback very well could serve them here in a good way. First of all, Taysom Hill is a pretty special player, right? You could use him more. That's one element that you can make up the ground. And you have a guy in Winston that's, you know, you know what you're getting. Well, now we'll see what behind the scenes Winston has done to be ready for this moment.
Well, remember, he left. He didn't play. I don't think he played the second half, right?
Yeah, he
Drew Brees
had to come
out.
In. Yeah, Winston had to come in yesterday for.
I think it was both of them were playing the second half.
Right.
And they still beat the 49ers handily.
Right.
Well,
the 49ers
Winston
are
connected
a shell
with Kamara a few times.
Yeah.
True.
Winston knew that at least. He goes, all right, Kamara, yep, get the ball to him. Got it.
Yep.
Can do.
But their next three games are two tilts against Atlanta and Denver. So the next three games. Very winnable games.
Yes.
Sure.
Right? And then the Eagles after that. I mean, they got their next four games. If he took a month off, their next four games are very winnable, very gettable games. And I know it's the
NFL,
but they've got
the two wins against Tampa head-to-head in their back pocket. So they've got some slack that they've earned.
Well, they beat the Bucs twice.
Yeah. I mean, they've already gotten past that. So, I mean, that, you know, that certainly makes it easier. That you don't have to worry about Tampa.
Falcons twice, Denver and Philadelphia. Whew.
Nice job by Philadelphia yesterday.
Jeez.
I asked Tim Hasselbeck, are they going to separate themselves as they should in a horrendous division?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. By the way, I think the Giants are starting to look like the team that's going to win that division.
Can you imagine
if Daniel Jones is playing pretty well?
Without Saquon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Jones has been fun to watch lately.
Tell you what, him running
yesterday—that's good.
He is definitely a running threat for sure. But yeah, the answer is no. The Eagles are not. They got real issues. They're not very good. Good news is, so does everybody else in that division. Issues. That should be called the Issues Division. All right, that is going to do it for us. Bears and Vikings tonight. We'll have a lot of things to get into tomorrow on the program. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.